Hello and welcome to More Than Tracy Turnblad, the podcast about fat representation in the arts. My name is Abby Rose Morris, and today I'm interviewing Brianna McDonnell, who I'm so excited to talk to. I've been a fan of her for a while now. Brianna describes herself as a fat babe creating fat media. So this encompasses a lot of different things. She runs a fashion blog called The B Word, and she's also produced the series called The Word that features a bunch of different plus size creators all talking about different taboo topics. She's also a theater producer and creative consultant and just overall incredibly cool person. So we have an awesome conversation coming up. First, I really want to talk about something that has been going on in the theater community this week. As many people know who are listening to this, I'm sure, we're going through this kind of reckoning in the industry right now with The Hollywood Reporter having recently published an article detailing Scott Rudin's abuse. If you're listening and don't know, Scott Rudin is one of the top Broadway producers. He produces like practically half the shows on Broadway. And he has been infamous in the industry for a long time for extremely abusive behaviors. Some of the ones detailed in the article were screaming at people, firing and then unfiring them, literally breaking a laptop on somebody's hand, physical violence, emotional violence, just incredibly toxic things that everybody knew that he did, and yet everyone still kept working for him, and everyone, until now at least, was really afraid to speak out on it. Some people still are, because they didn't want their careers to be ended by this very powerful man. So, First of all, I want to say I'm so glad that we are starting to have people speaking out about this. Both The Hollywood Reporter and Karen Olivo has really taken a stand in leaving Moulin Rouge. And thank goodness for people finally having the courage to speak out about this. I also think that Rudin's behavior to me, and I've heard anecdotes through the grapevine and things from friends in the industry, you know, you hear about it, he's got a reputation, but it's completely unsurprising to me anyway. Like, it's so unsurprising to me that this kind of behavior would be enabled in the entertainment industry, because we are primed to accept that kind of abuse and even perpetuate it ourselves. I really think this starts so young. As a young theater kid, you are told from day one, basically hardly anybody makes it. And these are all the things you have to do if you want to make it and succeed in the industry. And I think a lot of this stuff is really just the foundation of it is that basically that it takes a special person and a special level of talent to make it in the industry. And there's also the idea that you need to be at the absolute top in order to have made it, which is, if you didn't know, incredibly bullshit. You can make it in a smaller market. You can be regularly working. You can be making a living on background work. And whatever is making it to you is making it. But underlying that, we do have this culture that is like the arts are cutthroat. Only the lucky few make it to the top. So that sort of is underlying everything that we are taught. And so because of that, theater kids are told, and I'm sure kids who aren't actors, this is just my experience as a theater actor and someone who grew up in the theater. A lot of the time we're told things like, this is a cutthroat industry, only X percent of the people even work. So if you want to do it, you better get ready to be poor and destitute and broke and starving. You better sacrifice your mental well-being and your physical well-being and your everything if you want to make it. And that sort of culture, when you're told that you're lucky to even be there, you're primed from day one to accept crumbs. Like, from day one, we're told there is a scarcity in this industry, so therefore you better be grateful for everything you can get. And we're told things like, if you can see yourself doing anything else, go do that instead. Because this is such a hard road, and you don't want to take it unless there's nothing else you could be doing. And that breeds such a toxic culture, because not only does it like take out a lot of really interesting and smart people who have multiple interests, and by the way, those other interests like make you a more well-rounded person and therefore a better artist, but for people like me who are like, well, I can't even see myself doing anything else and being remotely happy, we're stuck. We're stuck in this industry that wants to pay us nothing and abuse us. And because we can't do anything else or can't see ourselves doing anything else or nothing else is going to make us as happy, we're stuck. We have to accept whatever the industry is, and we are going to mold ourselves and do whatever we have to do to fit into the status quo and like the way things are and the structures that already exist. And you're going to be afraid to stick your neck out because the stakes are so high that they literally tell you like, oh, you say one wrong thing, you're blacklisted. Like, this is part of my theater education and probably a lot of other people's. And honestly, I perpetuated that for so long too. Like, and maybe it's true. Like, maybe it's true. Maybe this podcast is going to cancel me and I'm going to not be able to work as an actor because I've spoken my mind about fat representation. And that's a risk that I'm taking right now. And that's really terrifying. It's really scary because I love acting and it's all I want to do. And I'm being really vulnerable right now and just saying, like, I did this podcast, and some days I'm really scared that I'm going to suffer consequences for it. But anyway, the sort of things that we are told are like, you know, you never know who you might meet, whatever. You never know who you might meet at a party. It could be a producer. You always have to be on. You always have to be networking. You're auditioning the minute you step in the building. If it's a college audition, the minute you step on the campus. Like, these things are so stressful. They get in your head. They really mess with you. They break you down. And so when you have supposedly done something wrong and you're being yelled at, or someone's overstepped a boundary and is being inappropriate with you, like, you're just going to be like, oh yeah, that's the way things are. And I think I can speak from my experience in acting classes. This is a specific thing that I have experienced, especially in like the sort of old school, you know, very like method drawing from your own life kind of acting. Acting teachers will step way too far over boundaries. I've been asked in acting classes. I had an acting teacher ask me if I'd ever been attracted to a woman. Little did he know I was like in the middle of like a kind of a bisexual awakening. I had an acting teacher ask me when was the first time I got wet. And I was 17 at this time, had never kissed anyone, had obviously never had sex, and just had no way to answer this question. And they do this in service of the acting. And I believe that most of the time their intentions are genuine. Or maybe I believe that because I'm fat and they couldn't possibly want to have sex with me. Ooh, at least that is what I tell myself. I know that's not really true, but that's what my thought processes were at the time. But they have no problem overstepping boundaries in your personal life, because when you have to be on every single second and all your friends are in the industry and you're always networking, even when you're at home alone with your friend or your partner, if your partner's in the industry or whatever, like, you're networking all the time. It is incredibly exhausting. And anyway, because of this, it's just kind of a slow erosion of your mental health. And there's no separation between who you are and what your work is. And of course, that acting class culture definitely kind of compounds that. But basically, the whole culture of the entertainment industry, especially for actors, I think, really comes down to opportunities are scarce. You better do whatever it takes. By the way, this completely plays into the way that bodies are viewed, the Broadway body or whatever. Like, how many times have people on this podcast, in life of all sizes, been told you got to lose that extra X pounds if you want to make it in this industry or if you want to play this kind of character, no matter what it takes? They don't care if you do it healthily. Like, they don't give a shit. They just want you to fit into the costume and be like conventionally attractive enough that it's palatable to watch you fall in love on stage. Like, it's so clearly not about health in the entertainment industry. Fat phobia has never for one moment fooled me into thinking that it was about health because of the entertainment industry, and because I've seen it so blatantly played out through my time as an actor and a theater student. So I just really think that the culture in entertainment is completely enabling people like Scott Rudin and people like the acting teachers who got way too up in my business, and people who mandate a certain appearance This is all mandated by this cutthroat culture, supposedly cutthroat culture. I was just talking with a friend the other day about how we expected the industry to be so much more cutthroat when we were in school, and then when we actually got into casting rooms, everyone was like pretty nice, and we were like, "Wait, what?" Because you're so like taught that it is mean and it is harsh and it is bad out there, and we never have the conversations that are like, "What if it wasn't?" or "What if we could make it better?" I actually do have to give my alma mater, UArts, credit for sometimes having those conversations and pushing the boundary on that. I would never, ever, ever have thought I deserved any kind of fair treatment if my professors in college hadn't told me that I did. So I really appreciate that on their behalf. It just all goes back to you should be grateful for anything you are given, any little crumb. I think that this mindset is often there for people about their bodies as well. I certainly have had it in relationships and dating. And I mean, to branch out even further, I actually think this is sort of a part of our culture at large, because especially when you get into workers' rights and unions and things like that, we are really expected to do the most for the bare minimum. And I think that our culture just breeds that, and it's hyper magnified in the arts. And because that exists, powerful people can get away with shit. I do have to say, I think we're having these conversations a lot more now, and I see a lot more people who are advocating for good things for people in the arts. Casting directors in particular, I feel like so many casting directors have really stepped up and been like so wonderful to actors and treated us like human beings and not like cattle. And I appreciate that so dang much. And there are so many good people in this industry. It's just that we are taught that we can't fight for any kind of positive change unless we want to be blackballed and canceled, I guess. There was a really interesting mention in the Scott Rudin article as well about someone who would sort of take out the frustrations of being yelled at, like on their subordinates, and like ended up just sort of turning the aggression like on the people below them. And I think that is a very common human psychological phenomenon, but I think it really speaks to how the culture of the entertainment industry enables new abusers to grow. Because when you're going to do whatever it takes to get ahead, yeah, you're going to put up with abuse, and you're also going to perpetuate abuse because you need to keep your spot on the top or whatever. It is so gross. This is an artistic industry. We are artists, and environments like this kill art, I think. They kill my ability to make art. I can't speak for anyone else, but they completely make me get in my head and second guess everything I do, and that kills art. So I really feel like this toxic culture is something I've had to fight against in ways I didn't even realize were fighting against it since day one, because it affects me so deeply. I'm, not to be gross, but like I'm a sensitive actor. I have an ego. I get knocked down easily, and this sort of culture would have you believe that being knocked down, one, means you can't hack it, and two, means you like just don't, you're just not good enough. So you sort of have to cultivate your own mindset and not get pulled into like the toxicity that is everywhere. And I also think the media representations of the entertainment industry purport this so much. Like, I really, honestly, I credit Glee with a lot of my, like, toxic beliefs about how the arts worked and having talent or not having talent and stuff like that. It's all just so perpetuated in the media. And a lot of it, you grow up to realize, is not as black and white as they make it seem, which is both liberating and terrifying, because then you don't have this blueprint that you've seen your whole life anymore. So yeah, I think all this stuff is deeply interconnected. If you have experienced abuse in the entertainment industry, my DMs are open. I'm always willing to, you know, be an ear if you want to talk. And I have stories of my own to share. Maybe I'll share more of them on this podcast. But this is a reckoning, and I'm so proud of everybody who is speaking out right now, and I'm so deeply sorry and understanding of everybody who's had these things happen to them, because that's most of us. Okay, well, on a lighter note, without further ado, my interview with Brianna McDonald. So, hi, Brianna.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you.
Just the intro is like the thesis statement of my life.
Oh my goodness.
To find like-minded people is like, oh, we've made it.
100%. Yeah. And I feel like you are a perfect fit for this podcast because your whole thesis of your blog and just your presence online is like representation matters and we don't see enough fat bodies in the media. So that's why you're here.
Oh my God. And I could talk about, there's so many things that I'm like, wait, let's talk about Hamilton and body diversity. Let's talk about, you know, my career and diversity. I was like, there's so many topics to cover.
Hell yeah. So first of all, will you explain a little bit about what you do in the arts and like what your creative life is?
Right. Oh my God. Okay. This might be the hardest question of the podcast because I feel like I'm all over the place. So
as you should be.
Right. So my background is in musical theater, and that's what I did all growing up. That's what I went to college for. I sang opera mixed in there, and that it just like has been a wild journey. And then I graduated college. I started directing theater, and I started directing like diversely cast theater in Los Angeles 6-7 years ago. And all the reviews were like, this is outrageous. And that's when I knew the industry was way behind my vision of what I wanted to see. So
wow.
Right. It's crazy. And the B word was started in there. And the B word is my plus size fashion blog. But really, it's my vehicle to make digital media. And ultimately, where I'm hoping my life ends up, and with all my passions combining, and I want to make, produce, film, star in film, television, theater, and make stories for and by marginalized body people.
That's gorgeous.
Right. Like, I want to see fat bodies on Broadway. I want to see fat bodies in box office hits. I want to see fat bodies and, you know, other marginalized identities and intersections as well.
Yes.
On the main screen.
Love all that. So how did you first get started and get to where you are today? What's your origin story? That's what I usually phrase this as.
It's funny, things happen and then you don't realize at the time. And then you're like, oh, wow, like that was clearly a full circle moment needed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm telling you this story from where I'm at, which is not exactly where I want to be in life, but I've gotten further than where I was at the beginning. So I feel like I'm a little bit in the middle, still working through it all.
For sure.
Literally, I was always just a performer. I just was like obsessed with performing. I love storytelling. And I like started voice lessons and then I started doing like community theater and I just so deeply fell in love with performing and I did the costumes for every show I was in and then was also in the show. Like clearly I was like, what can I do? So that's sort of always been me of like, I wanna put my hands on everything. I wanna create throughout the whole process. So going to college, I got to do that. And then again, after college, producing my own theater. It's just always been about putting people who I wanted to see when I was younger or what I needed to see when I was younger, creating that. Because I felt so alone in my experience. I was the only plus size person I knew. I was always the only plus size person in the cast. I was really like othered in my own experience. And I thought, oh, this is just like weird things like I'm going through. And then when I found the plus size community online and fat activism, I was like, wow, holy shit. No, this is because I am plus size. And these are things that I experience because the world sees me as fat. And I was like, oh, wow. Like that informed all of my creative work. And it informed all my creative work going forward. And it's so interesting that, you know, we as plus size actresses experience similar things. Like, I was always cast as the mom, always cast as the grandma, mm-hmm. always cast like not the lead, and was like, well, why? And then I started creating my own theater, putting plus size people in leading characters. And then, like I said, that was all the reviews were talking about, and all like, wow, this is so crazy that you directed Little Shop of Horrors and had a plus size Audrey. Like, simply can't imagine.
Oh my God, I would love to be plus size.
Right? They literally, one of the LA reviewers, I will not mention his name, his review of my show, Little Shop of Horrors, I directed it, and I always love conceptual musical theater, and like, I love casting diversely. I think it's more interesting. You can see a typical Little Shop of Horrors anywhere, any day of the week, but I want to see something different, unique, interesting.
Yeah.
And, the review was that the show was like Tracy Turnblad's dream.
Ew.
And I was like, weird mashup, like that it was like Tracy Turnblad's dream of being Audrey, like a hot character. And I was like, you're a revered reviewer in Los Angeles, like that's really tired. That's a tired opinion.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I'm on a mission.
Yes, queen.
Like, why is that the anomaly? Like, I think diverse casting is so interesting just across the board. I mean, Ado Annie in a wheelchair on Broadway, fucking incredible. So like, so that's what I want to see. And I don't know if that really answered my origin story, but girl, I'm on a mission.
Sometimes the mission is the origin story.
Honestly, create for what young Brianna needed to see or wanted to see, or like what would have changed my life.
Yeah. And I think that that's the power of media and representation, is like making you feel seen. Like, the very first time I ever remember feeling seen by any piece of theater, film, TV, you know, even like just images, was reading the book Shrill. And I also have read a lot of fiction growing up, and like just never had any characters that looked like me. And in fact, a lot of the books make a point to describe how thin and attractive the characters are. So, but like hearing Lindy West in that book describing all the role models she grew up with, and then like the experiences throughout her life, like just that made it so clear to me that it's incredibly foundational, both for people who are fat and for people who aren't fat, and who learn how to treat fat people from what the media says about them.
100%. And if we're not seeing plus size bodies in all kinds of roles, then of course, why are, like, that's reflected in society as well.
For sure.
100%. And I feel that goes for really any marginalized identity.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
When did you read Shrill? At what age were you?
I want to say 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, there was other stuff. There was Hairspray. There were brief moments, but that was the first time I ever actually heard a fat person talk about what it was like to be fat.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Did you have a shrill moment?
Mine was also much older, in my 20s as well, mm-hmm. or maybe not, because there was fleeting moments. Like, I was a huge, and still am, huge Gilmore Girls fan.
Oh, me too.
Spooky, of course, like having a full life, and like weight was never mentioned.
Yeah.
And that was really incredible. And of course, now rewatching, I'm like, wow, there's some fatphobic moments.
Yeah.
You know, but that character was really formative, but was also sort of a moment too. Queen Latifah in Chicago, prepping for this interview, I was like, I don't think I've ever realized how formative that was to me.
Yeah.
Right. Queen Latifah, just in general, like, honestly, her and her romantic lead roles, like, she transcended so many, the box people would put her in.
For sure.
And I just, like, love her. And I feel like the plus size community, like does not give Queen Latifah enough dues because she's been out here doing it.
Yeah, she definitely like blazed the trails. I recently watched Last Holiday and
oh my God, so good.
Yeah, it's so good. And what's really interesting about that movie too is it's not that her size is never mentioned. It's kind of alluded to that that's like a source of her like low self-esteem and like living a like quote small end quote life. You know, like she's dieting, she's kind of miserable, she's like dressing in like quote flattering end quote clothes that aren't fun, and then like when she like finds out that she's dying in the movie, she stops dieting, which I have never like I was like I cannot believe a movie that was made at that time showed like a woman who was like a little bit bigger stop dieting and not punish her for it and not like frame it as a bad thing. They were like, awesome, she's living her life now. And I was like, this movie is anti-diet culture.
Yes, it is. Honestly, Last Holiday I watch like every year and I'm like, oh God, this movie is just so good.
It's definitely a good Christmas rewatch. My other fat positive Christmas rewatch is The Holiday.
Another amazing movie. And I always tell my team, I'm like, you guys, we have to do a Nancy Meyer, a fat girl's Nancy Meyer movie. Like, yeah. That is, we have to do it because the food is part of it, the house is part of it, the fashion, the
yes,
like, movies I love to see. And I like just want to see, oh, look, fat bodies are included. Like,
yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about like the kind of aesthetic part of that, like the fashion, the house, the, you know, the like aesthetically pleasing things, and like to show that plus size people can be a part of that is something that I personally have mostly gotten from the internet. And it's something that you are doing on the internet and like in life of being a fashion blogger. So will you talk about that a little bit?
You know, it's really interesting. Rosie Beam Me, who is another plus size fashion blogger, she makes incredible content. I really think Rosie is incredible. And she posted recently something about like her followers was saying they don't follow plus size fashion bloggers because
I saw that.
Right. They're not like goals or like aesthetically pleasing or whatever. And I was like, that's such an interesting misinformed take because there are so many incredible plus size lifestyle bloggers and people doing so many different things and so many different style niches. And like, yeah, we should be included in that space. The quote unquote aesthetically pleasing lifestyle content place. And like that also segues into, oh, well, plus size people are not making money from those types of brands or like we're not getting reached out to for those collaborations. And again, it just boils down to discrimination. And I think it's a really interesting point. So for me, I don't really love making lifestyle content. That's something I've come to terms with this year, but God, do I love editorial. I love theatrics. I love the fantasy of fashion. So that's something that I love to do. And because I am plus size, it will always center plus size people.
Yeah.
And I love bringing other people in with me to do these shoots and include them. And I just really, really loved doing that. And if 3 people followed me and they were all my family, I would still be doing it.
Yeah, that's how you know.
Right.
How did you get started in blogging and in fashion?
Oh my God, it actually segues exactly to that point. I was doing photo shoots for Tumblr, literally lighting hairspray on fire in my mom's garage and filming it for like artistic purposes.
Iconic. Just,
right, like just because I wanted to. I was like doing male drag. Like I was just like doing whatever my artistic theatrical heart desired. And that's sort of where it started from. And that segued into the B word, which then here we are. Yeah. And like, it's so crazy because I feel weird being like, I'm an influencer, I'm a fashion blogger or whatever, because I feel like it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
2 years ago, I started doing like music videos and people were like, we've literally never seen this, but go off. And I was like, I wanted to do a cover of Diamonds Are Forever. I wanted to cover myself and 6 other plus size women in gold body paint for a James Bond themed moment. And we did.
That's amazing. I love that so much.
That's like one of my favorite projects. At the time, it was very stressful, and I was like, this is not coming together how I want. But looking back, I'm like, bitch, we did that. We really did that.
Absolutely. I want to talk about some of your other projects too. Will you talk about The Word?
Oh, God. Thank you for bringing it up. I love The Word. So, again, my ultimate dream in life is to be like Issa Rae, Reese Witherspoon, like produce, create, star, yeah, and make my own shit. So The Word was our first sort of move in that direction. And we filmed about half the season in the end of 2019. And then we launched it and COVID happened. So half of the season had to be done over Zoom.
Right.
But the response to The Word has been incredible. So The Word is a weekly IGTV show, and it's only plus size people in the cast. And we talk about all kinds of different topics. We talk about pop culture, like women's issues, social issues, politics, the fat experience. And it's just plus size people sharing their experience with different topics. And it ended up being like a smash hit. I have had producers approach me for season two. Like, it's crazy incredible. And everybody who works on it has been my team forever. And they're like, Brianna, like, where do you find this talent? Because it's all plus size talent. And I'm like, you guys, these are just the incredibly talented plus size friends that I have who are creating, yeah, on the internet and just have never been able to be cast or seen on camera or given the opportunity. So fat people are so talented. It's just the casting is not seeing us or the roles are not available. Yeah. So I wanted to create a show where I only cast plus size people. There's 3 to 5 minutes, the episodes. They're for IGTV. And we talk about everything from like pubic hair was one episode to like shopping in a mall while you're fat. And like, it's just conversational. It's fun. It's meant to be like connective. And it's really, again, a step in like creating representation, because so many of the topics we talk about are quote unquote taboo. And like, I want to break that down. I want to hear plus size people talking about getting a bikini wax and having to lift your stomach and like,
nobody talks about that.
Right. Or like, you know, like having sex and like, where do you get your confidence in the bedroom? Or like, one of our first episodes was what fictional character was like your childhood crush. And like, you know, like just stupid and fun and informative and entertaining and empowering and educational, all in 3 minutes.
Amazing. My next question was, how do you pick topics? But I think you just answered it.
Right. Yeah, literally anything that's taboo or people aren't talking about, or there's like a really like a reaction that I have, I'm like, we have to do that.
Yeah.
It's interesting though. The most successful episodes surprised me, because I really thought one of the episodes was about the word fat and how do you feel about the word fat? That was not our most successful episode. I thought it was going to be our most,
yeah,
watched, viewed, and shared episode, I believe, is either shopping in the mall or pubic hair. Mm. That was like really a huge, those were topics people were
interesting.
Yeah, I know. I was like, shopping in a mall, okay. Like, we all have that terrible experience.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, even as like a larger straight size, it was rough in like middle school we would go to the mall.
The roughest, the absolute roughest. Yeah,
when you'd be like in Abercrombie and they like go up to a size 9.
Yeah, terrible.
They only have 2 size 9s in the whole store.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I know. I feel like we all have collective trauma around shopping, like trying to shop in like,
for God, sure. I remember
like an XL at Limited 2, and I was like, my life is over. My life, yeah, as a fashionista is done.
Ugh, that's so tough. So I know. How did your relationship with fashion evolve over the years? Is there a time where you like got more into it or decided that like, fuck the haters, I'm going to wear whatever I want in my body?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I've always, always loved fashion, like deeply loved magazines, like runway shows. I read every book. Watched every video I could find before YouTube. You know, I was so into it. My parents would like drop me off at Borders with my friends, and like we'd be there for hours, and I would just read magazines. Like, I was obsessed with editorial. Yeah. But I never really saw it on myself. And so somewhere around, I want to say like 14, 15 is when I was like, Brianna, I just had this deep like knowing and thought that the world is wanting me to hate my body. And I don't have the energy or want to really hate myself. So I'm either going to have to put my energy into hating myself like the world wants me to, or I'm going to have to put the energy into learning to love myself and cultivate that kind of relationship with myself. And I really made a conscious decision. I was like, that's the route I'm taking. I'm going to choose to love myself, even though the world doesn't understand. And I think that's really when my fashion sense accelerated, because I sort of was like, well, this is how I'm going to express myself, and this is something I love, and I love myself, and I'm going to work on being my most confident, best self. And the way that I built that and created that for myself was through fashion. I think because I'm 6 feet tall too, I had just sort of been like, I'm big. Like, people are everywhere I go, people will stare. I'm a size 22. I'm 6 feet tall. People stare regardless. So I sort of was like, well, fuck it. I want to wear a fake fur green coat. Like, I'm going to wear that. People are already staring. But I can't lie and tell you, like, oh, I made that choice and I was completely confident. And like, insecurities manifested in different ways. And
it's amazing how they come up in such odd situations.
Right. And like, even I feel like I even kind of disassociated a little from my body and was just sort of like, yeah, my body's over there, but Brianna is over here.
Oh,
and
I identify with that so much.
Right. Right. And I was like, you can say I have a fat body or this or that or whatever, but I like, that doesn't matter because I'm over here. Like, it's so weird. And I mean, it wasn't even until, I guess, when I started the B word in 2015, I didn't even want to say that I was a plus size fashion blogger. So it's interesting to be on the full other tilt now where I'm like, I'm fat and everybody will say that. Like, I'm reclaiming the word fat. Like, and that's just how I feel. Like, so it's definitely a journey. But at 15, yeah, I definitely didn't have it all figured out, but I just knew that I couldn't. I was like, I don't have the energy to hate myself. So like, let's just
It does take a lot of energy.
It takes your whole life. It sucks it out of you. And
so
like,
true.
I see that in people and I'm like, I totally understand, but all the energy that you're putting towards hating yourself, loathing yourself, punishing yourself, you're creating it for yourself. Aside from obviously real discrimination and oppression.
Yeah. It's a Venn diagram, I think. Or you can have one, you can have the other, you can have both. It's certainly like the real oppression breeds self-hate.
Right, right.
But, you know, I also think both are spectrums. Okay, so this is a question that's like also just partially for me. So where do you find clothes?
Where do I find clothes? Oh my God. I feel, again, being someone who loved fashion at a young age and like that wasn't available in my size, I feel like I became a like professional shopper and stylist.
Yeah.
Just because I had to I had amazing, my mom and my grandma were really amazing. Again, I come from an all thin family. So they like could not really identify, but they would take me to the mall for hours and we would look through every single rack of clothing to find something that I liked. But thank goodness we've come a long way. So I do most of my shopping online. So ASOS is my go-to. Love ASOS. Yeah. I love Unique Vintage. I'm like really getting into Unique Vintage. They have awesome plus size, like not just retro inspired, but they have other really, really cute things. And I feel like they're underrepresented in the plus market.
Yeah.
Rue 21 is another one that I'm like, oh my God, I'm so into. Yes. The price, it's filling the Charlotte Russe hole in my heart. Cause Charlotte Russe is my favorite go-to. But Rue 21 is offering plus sizes and they're expanding. They're like on like in-store experience for the plus shopper. So I'm very excited about that. And I love the price point.
That's awesome.
Yeah, right. I don't know. And I love like bathing suits. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I was like a girl who like wore t-shirts to the pool. Now me loving bikinis and doing a bikini lookbook every year and like living in a bikini all summer. I'm like, that's a miracle.
Yeah, that's like your version of before and after. I really think that clothing is representation. You know what I mean? Because I have the same feeling when I go into a store and I see, like, I went thrifting the other day. And I'm seeing, like, as you get into, like, there's tons of smalls, there's lots of mediums, there's fewer larges, X-large, double X-large, and like it just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks as you like get higher in the sizes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think a lot of why that is because it's so hard for plus size people to find clothes we like that when we do, we don't want to get rid of them and we wear them till they break.
Yes.
But yeah, I have the same feeling there as I do when I go to a Broadway show and I especially as like a kid and a musical theater
Yes.
student, and like I go to a Broadway show and see like everyone in the entire show is like a size two, and
Yeah.
I'm just like there sitting in the audience being like, wow, this world isn't built for me. And like I say that too as like a definitely a small fat person and was even smaller then.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And I always talk about this with my best friends, and we all met in theater school. So we're all actors. And again, I'm the plus size one. But when we talk about like Hamilton, which has been heralded for diversity casting, which
Yeah.
is incredible, but was there body diversity? Like that wasn't even in the conversation. And like that's how I knew. I was like, theater has so long to go. But
Yeah.
thank goodness we have, you know, racial, ethnic diversity. But
We're very behind with size and disability.
right. And
Yeah.
the name of this podcast is just iconic because
Thank
I
you.
can't be told to add a Tracy Turnblatt song to my book anymore. I just simply cannot hear it. I cannot hear an unoriginal casting agent or manager or person say, "Have you sung, you know, Good Morning Baltimore? Have you, is that in the book?" No, it's not, and it
Wait,
won't
you
be.
get told that even at 6 feet? Because I'm 5'6" and have been told I'm too old to play Tracy Turnblad. Like I have lied on my resume to say I'm 5'5" so I can go in for Tracy Turnblad.
As you should, but me, yes, I was told that when I was younger. More so now, not so much, but I don't know. I'm also in this weird, I mean, I always played like older mom, being tall and plus size. I also was
Oh
like
yeah.
men a lot,
Oh,
and
definitely. Oh, there's so much to talk about there.
right. So yeah, the whole Tracy Turnblatt thing, it's like, why do we get one role?
Yeah, hence more than Tracy Turnblad. Something that I really respect about you and all the work you do is that you are giving voice to other plus size creators and, you know, just like kind of expanding our like normal, I guess,
Right.
preconception of like how many fat bodies we see in a space, which is
Yes.
usually one.
Right. And I think that's so boring, honestly,
Yeah.
because finding the plus size community changed my life, and also finding fat friends has did a 180 on my life.
For sure.
And those are just friendships that I hold so like near and dear to my heart. So to me, I didn't create the plus size community. You know what I mean? I'm not the first person to voice these opinions. So I'm always going to want to include others and shout people out,
Yeah.
and especially fat Black women, like
Yeah.
the people who created the body positive movement, the political roots of it, like they should be getting paid, and they should be have the most following. They should be the voices of the
Yeah.
community. And unfortunately, that's not where we're at. And so again, as a I mean, I'm a size 22, so I think on the scale, I don't know again where I would identify, like we said, like smaller into fat or wherever, but like there's
Yeah.
just, I hold so much privilege in the space
Yeah.
that if I can do anything, if I can point you, whoever follows me or listens to what I'm doing, if I can point you to other amazing people doing amazing shit, I'm going to.
Yeah, and I think it's also just that like fat bodies should be normalized and like a thing that we're used to seeing. And it shouldn't be like, oh, you're a, like, you know what I mean? You're a
Right.
plus size fashion blogger. Like, and I hope at some point we can get to a place where
Yeah.
it's not, it doesn't have to be part of your label or part of your hashtag, you know?
100%. The other day I saw this TikTok, and it was this plus size Black woman, and she was incredible. And I was like, holy shit, like her body looks like mine. She was in a string thong bikini on TikTok. And I was like, this is the energy that I want on my timeline. And I looked at the, and I was w looking at this video, and I was like, to me, I don't even see a plus size person. I just see like a gorgeous, confident person. Like it's so weird to me that people will look at the same thing and say, have disparaging remarks, you know, or feel any kind of way other than this is beautiful. So that's, I'm totally here creating more visuals to
Yeah.
challenge people's ideas of, like we said before, what's aesthetically pleasing, what's beautiful, yes, worthy, you know what I mean? We all are.
For sure. Do you ever get mixed up with other people when you're, all you have in common is your size?
I know. So it's an interesting thing sharing yourself and talking about, you know, body politics and whatnot. And I used to feel kind of weird when people were like, oh my God, you look just like me. Like, we both are shaped like a potato. And I'm like,
yeah,
huh? Like, I'm like, but then I also understand it is really exciting when you find someone who looks like you. And like, again, being a size 22 and 6 feet tall, like, that's a very niche body type. And like, I have smaller chest for plus size women. That's something that I get a lot of feedback on. I don't have like an hourglass shape necessarily.
Yeah.
So people identify for different things, but like, do I identify as that? Maybe not so much, but I enjoy that they have found what I make or joy or empowerment from me, you know, sharing a photo of myself.
Yeah. That's a great way to think about it.
Right. It took a while though. I'm not going to lie. Like I said,
for sure.
own spin and you're like, wait, that wasn't even how I think of my body. So I don't try to get a complex about it. Again, I'm really in a place with my body of where I just want to be completely, I don't want to say neutral, but I want to let my body be whatever my body is.
Yeah.
And that's like, I don't want to play good or bad on anything. You know what I mean?
For sure. That makes so much sense. I love that. Yeah. So with being a person who is visible on the internet, I am sure you get backlash and all kinds of nasty shit that's just started happening to me as I've launched this podcast for the first time. But how do you deal with that?
It's difficult. I wrote a video, I want to say maybe 4 years ago, called Shopping While Fat, and it went viral on Facebook. And it wasn't on my account. It was shared by somebody else, but it has probably like 3 million views on Facebook.
Yeah.
And every time I share it on Instagram, it gets hundreds of thousands of views and hundreds of thousands of comments. And it's interesting because I wrote it as a monologue for my one woman show. And then I wrote it and I was like, okay, we need to go to the mall and just film this on an iPhone. And that's what we did. And so it's a monologue. And I really thought I was being hilariously funny. I was like, I'm killing it. This is so funny. And everyone was like, this is absolutely not funny. Like, this is not hitting the mark. And so overwhelming amount of hate comments on that. And each time I posted, I react differently. And the most recent time I posted it was the beginning of quarantine. So probably not my best mental health moment.
Yeah.
And I posted it and I was really, really affected by the comments. And that was, you know, a year ago, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like, those comments don't affect me. It always hits differently. And like, that it really like triggered me in a way of inner child shit. Like, I was like, oh my God, like, why this is affecting me so much that people are calling me every name in the book, and I'm internalizing that as I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I'm not whatever. So those childhood that ideas that I had when I was younger that I feel like I've outgrown, they're still deep in subconscious and they pop up sometimes.
For sure.
And comments absolutely trigger it, and it is much easier to just ignore and just realize that, like, because I mean, I could go back and forth with people, but it never ends up like feeling fulfilling. I kind of have to just bless them on their way. And like, if you are in a place where you need to leave hate comments to make yourself feel better, like, I'm sorry that your life is so terrible.
Yeah, it's like, if you're literally against fat representation because you think you don't want to see fat bodies because you think they're ugly, I'm like, that's your opinion. Bye.
Right. I've been really struggling, to be super honest. Like, the media's representation betrayal of fatness and health with COVID has been like just so violent. And like, I have my vaccine appointment tomorrow.
I'm getting my second one tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm so excited.
Oh my God, I'll be sending vibes across the country.
And I'm honestly a little bit nervous, and I know so many people have gotten it.
Yeah.
Who have gotten the vaccine and been totally fine. And yet I'm just like a little bit nervous because I'm like, well, what if, like, you know, what the media and fatness and the effectiveness, like the effectiveness, I don't even know.
Efficacy.
Yes. Of the vaccine in, you know, fat bodies, and what's the validity there? And is that even true? And is this media funded by diet culture? And like,
yeah.
You know, the diet industry.
A lot of it is.
Right. And so it's like, so I'm like, Brianna, you know that you are healthy. You know that you are okay. You know that you will be fine. Mm-hmm. And it's just really a mind fuck. And so I've been really struggling there.
Totally. Yeah. Mind fuck is a great way to describe it, because it's like, when I feel healthy and like my body is capable, and that yet everything is telling you you're unhealthy just because of the way you look, like no matter what you are doing or how you are feeling, it becomes like a case of I can't trust my body and I can't trust myself, and I have to look outside myself for, you know, the way things are, which of course as a fat person is like a recipe for like terrible mental health.
Yeah, you just summed it up so perfectly, and I've been feeling really like, I don't know, maybe alone in that. But I know other people feel that too. It's just, I mean, with the isolation, it's difficult.
It is. It is tough. So let's talk a bit more about other fat characters, representations that have impacted you through your life. We've touched on a few, but do you have any others that are notable that you want to mention?
So again, I was like the theater kid growing up, and I feel like I kind of a little bit away from theater in the last few years. But it was roles that were played by plus size people that I was like, oh, I can play that role. Like, I'm going to become
obsessed
with it and learn every line and every song and do that. And so I was obsessed with finding roles that could be played by plus size people. So Mama Rose was like it for me. I used to perform. Right. I used to perform that in my room at what, 15, with costume changes by myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was one. Matron. Mama Morton, which Queen Latifah played in the Chicago movie, which is just one of my favorite movies of all time. That was a character that I was also like, I could book this anywhere.
Yeah.
But aside from that, not really.
Yeah. Were there any that like taught you fat is bad?
Oh God. You know, it's so interesting too. I've been really like trying to dive into like, what are the origins of like those thoughts for myself. And I had pieced together that fat meant bad, lazy, ugly, unlovable. Like those were ideals that I had come up with. No one had told me that. And I went to the doctor at like 12, and that is when the first time I remember them telling me your BMI is obese. And I lost my 12-year-old shit.
Yeah.
Sobbing, crying. My mom didn't know how to handle it. The doctor didn't know how to handle it. And I was just, it was the end for me. And my mom, it was like, Brianna, that was such a formative moment. And like, for me, it was a formative moment because I felt so alone. But I had put together that obesity and fatness meant this for my life. And that was through media. And like, that was just through subconscious messaging and not even conscious messaging. That's just what I saw.
That's a super interesting moment to bring up. I remember my first moment of having someone call me fat, like call me fat.
Yeah.
Which is, I was in, I think, fourth grade. I had just kind of gotten fat that year. I had a friend who came over to my house, and she was like, she was definitely like one of the kind of social outcasts of the school. And so I think she was just kind of socially unaware. And so she's like just hanging out at my house. And I remember I was just sitting on the couch, and she just goes, no offense, Abby, but you're really fat. Like, she just stated it as fact.
Oh my God.
My mom was like, that's really inappropriate to say. But yeah, like my friend literally just said that. And I think that,
wow,
It's pretty rare for people to literally just say that.
Yeah.
They don't want to hurt your feelings. But this girl, I guess, I don't think she wanted to hurt my feelings. I think she just...
It was fact to her. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a... Yeah. So that... But I remember feeling like the sky was falling and like... Yeah.
And so that's so interesting. And like, so when she said this to you, so the sky was falling, like, what was your preconceived idea of fatness? Like,
bad, like, just, I guess, unattractive, like a big thing for me, I think, especially as like a you know, like 10, 11 year old was like, no one's ever going to love me. But I would obviously, I would never admit that. But like,
no, that was me too. Yeah. I honestly thought that I truly believed that no man would ever be attracted to me and that I would just be like a career woman. I literally believed that. And
yeah,
until I started blogging and men threw themselves.
I was, that's wild.
How the fuck did I live so long in my life not noticing that men liked me or not believing that, or and then like feeling like I could have any man I wanted?
That's crazy.
It was a weird head trip, honestly.
Yeah, it is a head trip. I mean, I remember going to college for me was like, I mean, people didn't really hit on me at my college, but like suddenly I was getting catcalled for the first time in my life. I was like getting talked to by guys in bars and I was just like really confused. Like, and I was just kind of like, what's your game? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I know so many plus size women have that experience. And then there's a lot of plus size women who are like, that was never my experience. So it's just like such a weird,
it's interesting.
Where are we picking this up? And like, why are we internalizing this and caring as if it's the end all be all?
It's also crazy because I lived in like a household where my parents are like not particularly, like, they're not like big dieters or anything. Like we ate a lot of like organic food because I'm from Vermont. So obviously we're like,
yeah,
hippies, you know, and so like that's the community I grew up in. And my parents didn't let me watch any TV. We didn't have cable. I mean, I watched like all the Disney Channel I could at my friends' houses, but we didn't have cable at our house. So I couldn't watch any TV. I only watched movies. I wasn't allowed to watch movies until I was like five. And then like, obviously my mom was pretty careful about which one she showed me. And so like a lot of the movies I was watching anyway were like Sound of Music and like,
oh my God, fun.
Parent Trap and The Wizard of Oz. Like they didn't have big fat phobic messaging, yeah. But somehow I was still getting those messages. And I think a lot of it was from school because it was like prime obesity epidemic times.
Right.
And so I think that like getting that messaging at school was a lot of where I learned that fat was bad. Even though I wasn't like terribly bullied by kids, like there was like a comment once in a while, but I wasn't like a target for my size really in elementary school. But like when they talked about the obesity epidemic, I knew they were talking about me.
Yeah. Wow. That makes, I totally identify. I too wasn't like super bullied, I think because I was also the biggest kid. I picked it up. And school is interesting because, yeah, that was very much a huge deal growing up of like, what are you eating? Kids exercising, like get up and move, like with the government, like, you know,
for sure. Then I remember when the Michelle Obama thing happened, my high school completely redid all the things it offered in the cafeteria. So I hated the hot food at the cafeteria. So I used to only eat, they had these like locally made like protein bars.
Oh.
And they were like really like very hefty. They were like made of like peanut butter and oats and stuff. I don't know, but I loved them and I ate them all the time for lunch. And then they had like, I would eat like celery and peanut butter or like whatever they had. And they got rid of all these like local kind of like organic snacks because of the calories being too high for the new Michelle Obama program. And they replaced them with, I am not kidding you, baked Doritos and Rice Krispie treats because those were within the calorie limits. And so my senior year of high school, suddenly that's all that was in the cafeteria if you didn't eat the hot food. And so I remember eating like my lunch every day was like celery and peanut butter and a Rice Krispie treat. Like that's what I was eating because that's what was apparently healthier.
Right. I know the conversation on health is just like a whole, it's a whole thing. And like, it's even, it's in the forefront of my mind because of with COVID, but
for sure.
Yeah. It's just violent.
It definitely, that's a great word to describe it.
Yeah.
It's been coming up more and more on this podcast and I've been, I mean, I'm super into reading like anti-diet stuff. So it's, but I also, I'm not a, you know, I'm not a dietitian. I'm not a medical professional. So I feel like I don't have the education to really talk about it. So I'm just like, leave it to the people with the degrees. But also, like, I think about it constantly, and I like it's kind of become a hobby. So as a person who produces and casts theater,
yeah,
do you have any guidelines for, you know, making better opportunities for fat actors?
Wow, that's a great question. So as someone who casts people, and also with my creative direction and social marketing, I do a lot of casting of models. And it's been a while, but I do cast actors and things. And for me, it's just about making sure that, so like, I want to see everybody audition. I want each role is open to anybody. So body type to me is not something that I'm like, oh, I only want a fat actor in this role.
Yeah.
I'm looking for talent, honestly. So yes, as a plus size director, as a plus size casting person, of course, I'm going to say I want to see plus size people first, but you have to have the talent to back it up. And I would just encourage other people in casting to have that same mentality of like at least have some vision, like open it up to different people who could bring a different perspective.
For sure. All right, so it is time for Cast Me Cowards,
okay,
which
okay.
is when you tell me one role you should play that you wouldn't traditionally be cast in.
I have always, always, always wanted to be Sweeney Todd. And my senior year musical was Sweeney Todd in college. And like that, I wanted to be Sweeney Todd so bad. I mean, I wanted to be Mrs. Lovett too, but that's one of them. Sweeney Todd, I was like, God, that would be fun. And then I also want to be Roxy Hart, but on Broadway. I want to be like a fat Roxy Hart on Broadway.
I love it.
I would like love to do that. Again, anything that's considered like a like fun, sexy, romantic lead, like I'm interested.
Yeah, and Roxy is so complicated and dark too, which is like she has like layers that are not often available to like canonically fat characters.
Right. I was always the girl who wanted to be the lead. I was always the girl who wanted to be the lead. So I always saw myself as the lead. Like when we did like Bye Bye Birdie, I like wanted to be Rosie. And I was like me and another girl. And then of course I got the mom and I was like,
right.
No, like devastated. And then I looked back over my life and I'm like, oh my God, I really think it's because I was plus size.
Yeah. Yeah. At me. Being a sixth grader and playing Mrs. Marin Seussical. I loved it, but I really wanted to be Maisie. See, I wanted to be the sexy, like, comic girl. I didn't want to be, like, the leads. I wanted to be, like the soubrette kind of character.
Hell yes. I love that.
Like, I wanted to be Adelaide, not Sarah Brown. You feel?
Definitely feel. I have a friend who wants to direct a production of Guys and Dolls. And he's always like, I want you to be Adelaide. And I'm like, that seems like so much fun. And like, I would never like,
yes,
like, I'm thrilled that you want to cast me as that role. Like, hell yeah.
All right. So last question. We've kind of covered some of this, but what are you doing or what do you wish other people would do to combat fat phobia in media and entertainment?
Oh, I think I would love to see. I mean, obviously, like we said, I would love to see, you know, plus size people all over the place, cast everywhere. But before I think that can even happen, I would love to see plus size people and marginalized people in the writing rooms, in the producer, in the director seat, making, creating and telling their stories for themselves versus, oh, like there's a fat role, but not written by anyone that's plus size. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that will really lead to a more inclusive understanding and hopefully less fat phobic world.
Yeah, that's gorgeous.
Oh,
now, last thing, is there anything that you want to plug and where can people find you on social media?
Oh my God. Okay. Well, they can find me at the B word and I have some exciting things happening this year. I'm so excited to all the video projects that we had written, planned in pre-production for 2020 are being rolled out for 2021. So I'm just really excited for the future of the B word and they can find me at thebwordblog.com or the B word on Instagram. And again, I'm wanting all my things to make sense together. And so I'm really wanting to move the B word into a digital media maker space.
I love it.
Thank
Amazing.
you.
If you need any actors, call me.
No, literally, that's why I was like, this has been so amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, this has been wonderful for me as well. I'm so glad that I've had you on, and I think also you have a really interesting perspective because we don't talk about fashion enough on this podcast.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, well, have a great rest of your day, and thanks again for coming on.
Of course.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to More Than Tracy Turnblad. If you liked it, hit subscribe and leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts. That would be awesome. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, all at More Than Tracy T. And just tell your friends. Word of mouth is great, too. You can find more information at morethantracyturnblad.com.